providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. These final two segments, we are recording from the floor of the New Orleans Investment Conference, and we are going to continue to focus on the resource sector, driving down to a lot of the resource stocks. Happy to report that we're sitting down now with Brent Cook, economic geologist and advisor to Joe Mazumdar over at Exploration Insights. Now, Brent, let's talk about, again, the general state of these markets for resource companies. Look, we all kind of expected this conference to be a little bit slower with a little fewer companies, just simply because the state of the market is these companies have been struggling. That is what we're seeing here, but we are still getting some positive outlooks from some of the speakers. What's your takeaway from now being at this conference and how closely you follow these stocks of the overall state of this market when we're talking about resource stocks?
Well, it certainly has sucked for the past, few years, but I do see something happening that is new, and that I'm seeing a lot of fresh faces, people that have not been in the industry before, not been in this sector. Like, we had a show of hands the other day in the hall, and I'd say a quarter to a third of the people were there for the first time at the Beaver Creek Precious Metal Show as well. I asked that question, and maybe, again, a third of the people were new to the sector. So what I'm seeing is people starting to look, starting to try and understand how this thing works, and getting to know the sector. So I think we're setting up for a really strong market going out into next year. Like, this tax loss season is the time to be buying things, especially in the precious metal sector.
Well, Brent, along that line of thinking, with so many new people coming into the sector, you're pretty good at identifying red flags. And for people that maybe see everything on sale, not all stocks are created equal, what are some of the things you would tell new people in the industry to maybe look out for or avoid when they're trying to position in tax loss selling season?
We know the odds of any individual prospect turning into a discovery in a mine are extremely low, but it takes work to figure that out. So finding the fatal flaw is what Joe and I do more than anything else. Is we like to invest early, understand what the companies, so you need to understand what the company's looking for in terms of tons and grade, and what the economics are going to be if they're successful, and have those markers to see if they meet those goals or not. And if those goals aren't met, you've got to sell, period. Holding out with, you know, the hope, if you will, that something good will happen, it usually doesn't.
What should companies be looking for in this market? Because quite frankly, it seems like low-grade bulk tonnage does not move the needle. Higher grade, we know, works in bull markets. It also seems to work in bear markets. What sort of deposits do you like to see being at least explored for?
Well, real simply, high-margin discoveries in reasonably safe jurisdictions. That's what I'm looking at. And they're out there now. You can buy those for less, you can buy them real cheap right now. I mean, I mentioned Rupert Resources the other day on my presentation. Arizona's Sonora Copper. Again, those are very high margin, good deposits, good jurisdictions. Yeah, that's what you're looking for, and you can buy those cheap now. I think in terms of fatal flaws, one thing that kills a lot of projects is the metallurgy. Basically, how do you recover the metal? And that's really important, because a 10 gram refractory deposit, meaning you got to essentially break the gold out of the pyrite crystal, is not near as good as a 1 gram deposit that's been oxidized through surface weathering. You need to understand those processes, and that's key. And ask the companies that. Ask the companies, how are you going to recover this if you're successful in finding something? What's it going to cost?
Well, and when you think about companies that are de-risking big projects, they put out a series of studies, and they start with a PEA, they go to a PFS, they go to an FS, that's a pre-feasibility study and a feasibility study. What do you look for in those as potential things that catch your interest and other things that maybe shake your head when you see them?
I think what you need to realize is that certainly the preliminary economic assessment and even the pre-feasibility are more designed to be sales documents to retail. But real companies, if they're interested in a project, they do their own study. And they're often much more realistic than the PEA. So what I look for is, okay, what was the metal price they used? Is the recovery percent reasonable? What's it going to cost to build this thing realistically? And how are they going to get the money to do it? I mean, I see companies with a, what, 20 million market cap need to raise $400 million to build something. And that's, you know, it can happen. You're going to be diluted out of any success. So it's not about market cap. It's about share price. And you watch these companies that try and build something, and although their market cap might increase, share price doesn't. That's a killer.
We've seen that so many times, haven't we?
Back to that whole recovery aspect, though, do you like more focused deposits, like one or two type of metals, or do you like some of these polymetallics that have just a handful of metals in there that, yes, they can improve certain economics, but back to your point, how are you going to go about recovering all of these different metals?
I tend to stick to simple deposits. Although another one I mentioned yesterday was Meteoric Resources, Australian listed company. They've got a rare earth deposit in Brazil, and rare earths are really, really rare in terms of easier to get out of the rock. But these have been oxidized, so it's much simpler. I mean, look at, like, there's a company I know that has a silver equivalent, yet the silver grade is only 26 grams, but they've got zinc, lead, copper, all low grade. And what you got to realize is there's always a certain percentage of the metal you're not going to get out. And the lower the grade, that percentage increases because that's not going to come out. So you need higher grade.
Well, Brent, let's also talk about, since you've been so involved with going to site visits and the exploration side of the business, there's a lot of investors here that invest in the drill plays. And some of them are looking at things before the assays are out, just on the targeting, and other companies, they're positioned after they've made a discovery. How do you play both, the pre-discovery stories and the post-discovery stories?
Well, I look at the geology. For instance, there's a company in, I guess I could just keep naming companies if I want. Okay, Radius Gold, they've got a project down in the richest silver district in the world, Fresnillo, and they've found at surface outcropping indications that there's a gold system at depth. So this one I'm watching, and I bought some ahead of time because I've seen, you know, the geology's right. And if they hit, this thing's going to go nuts. But others, I'll wait until I see the drill results to get a sense of, is this really working or not? Tectonic metals is one that I like the geology, but I think it's a much higher risk. So I want to see the drill holes and then make that decision. So I play it both ways. It really depends on the geology to me.
What do you think of the corporate strategy of some of these majors entering some of these companies as funding partners, earn-in agreements where they have the ability to earn into some of these assets by spending money, so it saves the actual exploration company money, but on the back end, it can take away other potential buyers. How do you like that strategy?
Right now, if you can get someone to give you money, you take it. I think that's a great strategy. If the joint venture is struck properly. Headwater Gold, for instance, has excellent deals with Newmont right now on four projects in Nevada that, if they're successful, Newmont has to spend in the order of $145 million to get 65%. Headwater's got a market cap of $18 million. They're not going to raise $145 million. So I think it's a great way to play it.
Now, along that same line of thinking, when a company has made a discovery, maybe they've done a couple seasons of drilling, they've even maybe put out a resource, some of them are looking at bringing in a strategic partner at that point to help fund the operation and maybe help with the development and build the project, but you're giving up part of the project at that point. How do you feel about a strategic coming in maybe mid-cycle and taking on a bigger part of the project where the company has a smaller stake?
I've got no problem with that. I think, again, it's a matter of not market cap, share price. And if you can get someone to come in at the heavy spending stage where you've got to do, let's say you've made an underground discovery and you need to look at a bulk mining scenario in a porphyry copper, just the feasibility study to determine if it's economic or not is going to cost hundreds of millions. So yeah, let's bring in BHP to spend that money and I'll end up with 25%. But I didn't just spend all that money. I think that's the way to go.
Any insights on what majors or even mid-tiers, what potential acquire companies are looking for? Because we haven't seen many deals right now.
They're looking for the same thing as I am. High margin deposits that are permittable in reasonable jurisdictions. And they're few and far between. I mean, you know, there must be, I don't know, 50 to 100 companies on the venture exchange that have got some sort of resource, but most of them are marginal. And the majors have hopefully learned their mistake not to buy those marginal deposits anymore.
What about certain size? It was a decade ago that we were saying 1 million ounces was great. That doesn't seem to move the needle for the majors.
You're right, it doesn't. It's now gotten to be 2+ million ounces. Although, again, it comes down to margin. If you can find a million-ounce deposit with your all-in sustaining costs of $500 to $700, that makes more money than a much larger deposit with less margin.
Well, when you look at the valuations that most of the development stage companies are getting, resource stage companies, you know, if you think back to the last cycle in 2010, 2011, they were getting $100 an ounce plus on those. Now we're seeing projects that get 20, 10, even sub 10. What do you think is driving the change in the valuation? Because the metals prices are actually holding up pretty well, but the companies are being valued like they're never going to be built.
That's a problem with this sector. This sector right now is hated. You know, I mean, bad news, bad share prices begets badder share prices, I think. But I think that's about to change.
What about other metals then? We've talked a lot about precious metals, but you've also thrown in a copper company too, and some other polymetallic assets. What other metals do you like outside of gold, maybe even silver? We didn't really get into that either.
Gold, silver's all right. Copper for sure. Rare earths. Uranium's all right. Nickel. Those are the ones I'm most focused on.
When you say something like nickel, we don't talk about it as often, but it's hard to find just nickel-only companies because they're almost always polymetallic. They're sometimes with PGMs. Sometimes the nickel occurs with copper. Do you look for something where the majority, and this applies to all polymetallic deposits, do you look for something where there's a real leading metal in there, or just look at the sum total of all the metals and make your decisions based on that?
I prefer a major metal. And there are companies. There's Centaurus, Australian, listed down in Brazil. There's Bravo. Again, a great deposit they're defining down in Brazil, and Brazil's a good place to be. So there are nickel projects out there, but they're not near as many. It's tougher to find good nickel deposits.
When it comes to management, a lot of people talk about management. You need to stick to good management teams. Are there any newer management teams out there that have really got your attention that you are either paying more attention to or you think are doing the right things that should be noticed by investors?
Yeah, there are. I mentioned Headwater Gold, and they've got another company, Inflection, which is looking for copper in Australia. That group is very, very focused and doing a good job. The Discovery Group, they've got a number of companies within that umbrella that do good work. That's the sort of thing that seems to be working. I like the idea of groups getting together so they can spread the risk, share the costs, and you've got a number of experts that can jump in at different times to help out on an individual company. I think that's a good model to go by now.
Well, another thing we always like to check with people on is jurisdiction. Some people only stick to North America and safe jurisdictions. Some people don't mind going into riskier jurisdictions if they're priced accordingly. How do you deal with jurisdiction risk?
It's very site specific. I mean, we mentioned Arizona Sonora Copper. That's a great deposit. That's going to be permitted and built. But there's others there that are going to have a permitting nightmare. And you've got to have water. So it comes down to the individual location to a large degree. Same in Argentina. You know, you wouldn't want to try and build something in Mendoza province. But Santa Cruz is great. Obviously, I'll avoid places like Venezuela, California, some of the African countries. Scandinavia, great place to be looking at. They've got, you know, they recognize the need for minerals, and you get things done.
When you're looking at some of the charts of these companies, and I know you focus more on geology, but fact of the matter is there's a lot of companies right now that are practically going no bid. So what do you think of these kind of companies? How much weight do you put in? Just how many shares certain companies can trade, whether they're pre-discovery, post-discovery, what have you?
Liquidity is kind of a problem. I mean, I've got a few stocks that if I tried to sell $10,000 worth, I'll crash the market. That's kind of a bummer. But then again, like Latin Minerals, that's another one I talked to yesterday. They've got a market cap around $5 million or so, and Anglo is going to be spending in the order of $8 million testing one of their projects. That's not a bad risk to reward.
Brent, another thing I think you do incredibly well is you go on site visits and you see things that you don't see on a corporate presentation, you don't see in a news release. Maybe give people an idea of some of the benefits you get by going out to site visits and why they should check out the work that Joe does over at Exploration Insights.
It is key to go look at these early stage projects on the ground. You see things there that are not in the flip books or not, you don't see otherwise. You see how management works, you see how they work with the locals, you see how the team works together. That's really important. And then you see what the topography's like. I've been to a project that looked really good on paper, and I get there, it's like, hang on, this is on a cliff, and down below there's the water leading to the town down the road, and you're not gonna pull that up. That's not on the, you gotta go and look at these things. And you look, more often than not, it's never as good as you hope it's gonna be.
Well, of course not, right? They're not going to put that stuff in the presentation. Yeah,
good point.
What can you look for in presentations, though? Because not a whole lot of people even get invited on site visits. So how can you look at presentations or the company's website? Even something like Google Maps, how can you try to pick out some of those flaws?
Well, Google Maps is a good way to get a feel for what it looks like around there. Certainly, I think how a company presents itself is really important. They need to show, even if you don't understand what everything's being shown, if a company puts its cross sections, long section, sections, maps, all the drill data, not just highlights. I hate it when they just put drill highlights. Like, come on, it's the other holes I'm interested in. Those sorts of things. So I think just the way a company presents itself tells you a lot. I've got, little rules that I go by. If the first thing the company starts talking about is its ESG or safety policy, it's a sell. If there's some legal guy up there going along with, whatever it is, that's a sell. Tell me about the metal. Why the metal's going to go higher? Come on.
What about in press releases? When you look at press releases, there's companies that release press releases, and you kind of covered some of that with having all the drill holes in there and the chart data and the mapping, but are there any things you see in press releases where you just shake your head or it's an immediate avoid because of the way they're presenting themselves?
Again, a good press release should have a couple of paragraphs that explain very simply to anyone who understands what they think is happening. And then it should have all the details for someone like myself that I can figure it out. It should not just have drill highlights. Too often I look at these maps and I can see there's other holes been drilled there, but historic holes, but they don't talk about those. And they're really hard to find. Those historic holes are the ones that are really important. Like what was found before.
Back to jurisdiction, one other question, because we don't get a whole lot of, interest from North America in Australia. But quite frankly, the Australian companies are doing very well. They seem to be funded much better. They seem to have easier access to capital, and they seem to run their mines more profitably. So are you interested in Australian plays? Have you been, in a way, moved a bit more to those companies?
Definitely. Well, I lived there for a long time, and I know a lot of people there. I've worked there. And yeah, I think Australia, the markets and the participants are much more focused on reality, I think, because it's that sort of a country and culture. It's not, I think Canadians tend to be, mining the public markets, whereas Australians try and actually mine the rock. That's where they're going because it's more of a culture there. They understand it better, and it's a much bigger part of their economy. So yeah, Australia is great. I've invested in a lot of companies over there.
Maybe one more just kind of high-level question about how you approach your portfolio. There's a lot of reasons to buy if you see attractive geology, or you see news that gets your attention, or you see some momentum in the stock where the management team is building good value. But when do you decide to exit a position? Is there some kind of an exit strategy you have, or when do you decide to rotate money from a winning stock or a losing stock into another issue?
I try and keep my portfolio to 20, 25 companies. I think that's what realistically you can keep track of. And so if there's something I want to buy above 25 companies, I probably got to sell something because there's probably something in there that is not going to perform as well. I think it's on an individual basis if what you're going to hold and sell. But a lot of times you'll see these stocks rise dramatically without a good reason. There's a fatal flaw. The metallurgy is not going to be right. People don't recognize that. That's when you sell. I've probably made more money selling failures than winners.
Yeah, you just need that little bump, hey? You need that promo behind it and then say, something doesn't look right here.
Exactly.
Brent, thank you very much for taking time with us. It's always a pleasure seeing you at these conferences, and I'm sure we'll see you again next year. So thank you again for not only being here, but also your speech. And everybody, thank you for tuning in on this weekend show. We're going to have a few more interviews coming from the floor of this conference throughout the next week. So be sure to visit our website and podcast to keep up to date with all of those. Everyone listening, thank you very much for tuning in on this weekend show. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.